Okay, why don't we get going? My name is Jody Kretzmann, and this is Julia Hinderly. And we have been sort of chatting for the last few days about how blessed Holden is constantly to get new waves of talented young people here, working on staff and just visiting as junior high school students and high school students and then college students and beyond. And we thought it would be a lot of fun to try to do a conversation that's a little bit intergenerational about the kinds of wonderful contributions that young people make, not only here at Holden, but to congregations and communities all over the place. So let me just say a few minutes of sort of framing up remarks here at the beginning. I'm interested in this from the community point of view. I don't think our communities are ever healthy or complete or vital unless young people are contributing to them in some way. I think we all belong to communities when we're asked to contribute to them. Holden is wonderful at doing this constantly, right? But that's what a community is. If nobody thinks you've got anything to contribute and nobody ever asks you, you're not a part of that community. And Holden is obviously a place where everybody is asked constantly. Let me start with just a little bit of a framing story. About 3 years ago, I'm at Northwestern University in Chicago. We get people coming through from all over the place sometimes that we get to meet with. And about 3 years ago, we had a delegation of three women from India who had been visiting communities across the United States. And they came to see us just about as they were going back to India to sort of debrief what they had found. They had visited, I don't know, 50 different communities, and they were observing a whole lot of things about how communities work in the United States. And they had wonderfully interesting things to say. And at some point in the conversation, I asked them, as you travel across the United States, what surprised you the most? Was there anything that sort of stood out that was unusual that you didn't expect? And the leader of the delegation sort of smiled, the other two smiled too, and they said, you know, we were just talking about this last night, and we all agree that the most shocking thing that we discovered in the United States was that you have a group in the United States that we don't have in India. And I said, okay, we probably do. We've got people from all over the globe here, and India is diverse, but it doesn't sort of draw people from all over the place. They say, no, we don't mean ethnic or cultural diversity. I said, okay, so what is the group that you found here that you couldn't find in India? And they said, you have a group here called teenagers that we don't have in India. And I said, what do you mean you don't have teenagers in India? They said, we don't have teenagers in India. I said, well, don't you have people between the ages of 12 and 19? In India, you're in trouble if you don't, right? That's the. They said, oh yes, we have people between 12 and 19, we just don't have teenagers. So I said, okay, I'll bite. What do you mean? What do you think a teenager is? What have you learned that a teenager is in the United States? And their reply was just devastating. They said, a teenager has three characteristics in the United States, not in India, in the United States. Number one, a teenager is somebody that everybody else in the country thinks is a problem. That's the first definition. Secondly, a teenager is somebody who almost never has meaningful relationships with anybody else who is not a teenager. So no intergenerational stuff goes on. And third, they said, it's pretty clear to us, she said, a teenager is somebody who in the culture in the United States is regarded as completely useless. Except, she said, when they go to the shopping mall with their purse or their wallet. Then they're a useful citizen because they're buying stuff, right? So a teenager is somebody who's regarded as a problem, who only relates to other teenagers, and who is useful only as a consumer. And so we then got into a conversation, well, so how do you avoid in India having teenagers, right? You've got people between the ages of 12 and 19, what do you do? And they said, well, we're worried about it in the big cities, in Bombay and our other big cities. We think we're losing the battle here, and a lot of our teenagers are gonna be like your teenagers. But in the villages, they said, you can still go to villages where it's clear that at every age, a young person is given an important function in the village. So they gave an example. When you're 12 or 13, in many Indian villages, you're given a little background, kind of a course on what this village is, what its history is, what its culture is, what it does economically. So you know all about the village, and then there's a ceremony, and the 12 and 13-year-olds are designated officially with a big ceremony as the village greeters. So they are the people who, when somebody from someplace, another village, comes to the village, they greet them, and they show them around the village, right? And they sort of explain that this is a role which is absolutely necessary in the village, and everybody in the village values the role, but it's also a role that's age appropriate. 12 and 13-year-olds are young people who are completely curious about what's over the horizon in the next village. So they get to be the first people to encounter visitors. Right? They get to talk about what's in the next village over. And they gave lots and lots more of those examples as people sort of got through their teenage years, how they were constantly given roles that the whole village needed done that were appropriate to their age and led useful lives. And they said, you know, that's not waiting for adulthood. That's right away putting people to work in valuable ways. So that's, I think, the dilemma. That's the sort of frame. We've got to get rid of teenagers in this country and get back to valuing young people for all of the contributions that they make. And I want to just say one or two other quick things. This is not a recent phenomenon. I'm going to, because I'm a teacher, I get to give you a quiz here. Who do you think said, our youth today now love luxury, they have bad manners, contempt for authority, disrespect for older people. Children nowadays are tyrants, they no longer rise when elders enter the room, they can contradict their parents, they chatter before company, gobble their food, tyrannize their teachers. Bad manners, flout authority, no respect for elders. What kind of awful creatures will they be when they grow up? Any guesses about who said that?
I'm guessing it was like at least
100
years ago.
Right. At least 100 years ago. Who's it? Somebody said something?
I just said right.
Socrates.
That's exactly right. It is Socrates. 5,000 BC. 500 BC. That's exactly right. But he was not alone in this opinion. I'm just sort of pointing out to you young people that you've got a problem, and we're ready to help you solve it, but it's not a new problem. It's been here for a while. Aristotle says, when I look at the younger generation, I despair for the future of civilization. Not to be outdone. Plato jumps in, of all the animals, the boy is the most unmanageable. Peter the Hermit says the world is passing through troubled times. Young people think of nothing but themselves. This is in the Dark Ages, right? But they seem to agree with everybody that's gone before them. They have no reverence for parents or old age. They're impatient of all restraint. They talk as if they alone know everything. And what passes for wisdom with us is foolishness with them. And then the girls really get slammed. As for the girls, they're foolish and immodest and unwomanly in speech, behavior, and dress. And then Disraeli, a few centuries later, says, youth is a blunder. A couple more. Oscar Wilde, getting up into the 20th century, the youth of the present are quite monstrous. They have absolutely no respect of dyed hair. Do you know about Oscar Wilde? Was sort of a flamboyant character. George Bernard Shaw says, youth is such a wonderful thing. What a crime it is to waste it on children. And Cleveland Avery, there are three terrible ages of childhood, 1 to 10, 10 to 20, and 20 to 30. So we've got a problem here, and I think the challenge, to just summarize it quickly, is to sort of work with all of the folks, young people and their allies, on this kind of a set of shifts, right? How do you go from thinking about young people as a problem to thinking about young people as a problem solver, from a client or a recipient to a change maker and a co-participant? One of the phrases I hate worst is at-risk youth. I know of no young person or older person that I've ever encountered who's not constantly at risk. We all are. To a leadership asset to be cultivated. I don't like myself the phrase tomorrow's leaders, because it implies that there's nothing to be done today. Or that the reason we're paying attention to young people at all is that they are, the last line there, adults in the making, rather than citizens today, contributors today, people who make hold in what it is today and make their congregations and communities what they are. What do we miss if we don't? recognize and activate the contributions of young people, stuff like this. We missed fresh perspectives and the fact that they're wonderful collaborators and they can stretch a dollar. They don't need a dollar to make anything happen a lot of times. They're passionate about the issues. They're impatient. They never tell us that won't work because we've tried it before. And they best know what other people, young people, want and need. So there are just endless reasons, it seems to me, to be excited about encountering the kinds of young people who tend to be attracted to Holden Village and to exercise their muscles as contributors to community here. And Julia has consented to prompt a few people, I think. Is that right? Is it?
Sure.
I think what we really want to do, Julie and I, is to feel the conversation now from you all about your own experiences, where young people really have been powerful contributors to congregations and communities. Julie, go ahead.
Those of you young people are here. I know I've talked to some of you guys, but anybody can jump in anytime. We're just looking for examples in general where folks our age and younger than us actually like. We're welcomed into participating either at church or in, you know, in school, in any organizations. I know, Inga, you led a group at school, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a couple things about that?
Sure. I was the leader of Key Club.
Let's speak up so because the room is a little cavernous here.
Key Club is a service club at my high school. It's actually an international club, through Kiwanis Club. And so the range of young people at my high school, we'd either have probably 20 to 100 that would come and gather to either raise money for our local charities or to send money abroad to help end world hunger or disaster relief. And one of our biggest projects we would do is serve at our local soup kitchen. And so not only was it a great way to help our surrounding community, but to bring awareness to the students at my high school so they can continue spreading the word and using their gifts to help others.
Where was this?
Lincoln High School in Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
In Sioux Falls, okay.
And were you invited into that position or did you take it on?
My sisters actually were also leaders in it. And so we sort of carried it through the family, and the last 2 years I was the leader of it, and now I passed it on to younger people as well.
How did you invite younger people in to take over for you, or to be a part of
was,
the group?
By word of mouth. Friends would invite other friends, and we'd all join together. But we also wanted to diversify the club, so we would set up the cafeteria and tell students that were interested what we were about, and so we got lots of kids who may not have had other extracurricular activities. We got them to participate in service and had a great time.
And the people at the organizations that you were helping out on in the service projects, did they take you seriously as?
Most of them did. A few times at the soup kitchen, if things would get a little out of hand. They're a little impatient with us, but for the most part, they're very gracious and thankful for what we had to offer and provide for them.
What do you think the young people who did this got out of
it? I think they not only felt like they were contributors and helped their communities, but they also felt joy in meeting other people who had similar gifts that they did. And meeting people in the community that they don't get to interact with as much on a daily basis. So I think there is a lot to be given to them, not only at school, but in relating to others, intergenerational within the community.
Did some of them continue after? I mean, after that organization's done now, or do you?
I hope so. I haven't been in touch with too many as I'm out here right now, but I think seeds have definitely been planted and hopefully they'll be stretched and who knows if they'll stick with the soup kitchen route or we also have like an animal shelter that some kids are really interested in that. So hopefully by finding other projects throughout the community, people can bring their gifts, their interests to find a project that they enjoy doing and helps others.
And some of you guys have worked up at Holden since you were very young. One of the easiest places for kids to jump in to work here is at the snack bar. You may have noticed when you're getting your ice cream scooped, oftentimes it's being scooped by a 12-year-old. And that's just sort of normal for here. Us, we don't think twice about it, but in the outside world, you might think, oh my goodness, there's 12-year-olds scooping my ice cream. But here, the kids, they just jump right in, they work, and they do a great job, and nobody says, oh man, you're too young to be doing this. Joseph, well, Anna and Joseph here work in the snack bar all the time. Anna's the area head this summer, and Joseph pretty much ran it last fall How did you end up running the snack bar, Joseph?
Well, actually, at the beginning of the year, Grace signed up for the job, and she ran it for most of the fall, but then she kind of dropped, and she worked in the kitchen after that, and then Matt took up the area head, and he would do most of it, but there was times when Matt just couldn't really run it, so, and I was a common scooper, so he passed it on to me.
So you pretty much, what were your responsibilities with running the snack bar?
Well, in the fall, it's not as big as in the winter, and summer, sorry. It's a lot more low-key. You really just bring out the ice cream, and you scoop until nobody else shows up, and then you stop.
And you clean up.
Yeah, you clean up, yeah.
Collect money. I know you're in charge for how much money a week do you think the snack bar brings in?
About $2,000.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow. $2,000 a week?
And you're so much charge.
Well, I have a comment about that. We were, my friend and I were having ice cream yesterday, and it was a little cool outside, so we decided to sit at one of the stools, you know, and we were just sitting and enjoying our ice cream along with the other 500 people that were enjoying their ice cream. But it was sort of almost startling to us to go like, oh, wait a minute, these are young people running this place. And you're kind of looking around going, where's the adult? Oh, there's no adult, you know. And then I'm looking, so now I'm observing, you know, how are they doing? Pretty good. They're keeping busy. Look, he's over there. He just went around there. Now he's doing that job. Now this person moved from there, and that person helped to do that, and that person helped to do that. And, I mean, I'm watching, and I'm thinking, this is complete teamwork. They got it completely covered, you know, and it was way cool. I mean, it's a lesson for me.
Yeah. I just had a very similar lesson. I have just been on a mission trip to South Dakota, to Martin, South Dakota, with mostly high school youth, a few teens. And I went in as a chaperone, and not only were the youth fabulous at playing with these Native American kids and painting buildings and stuff, I also, when we got there, assumed there would be sort of a very experienced adult creating this program, but we went with YouthWorks, and there were four kids who had just graduated from college, and they were in charge of the whole summer program. There was nothing else. They were in charge of engaging with that community, finding the families in need, scoping out the houses that needed to be painted, working on those relationships with those kids, you know. And our whole program for the 59 of us that were there, and all summer long these groups come, four kids who were 24 years old ran that whole summer program in that really needy community with a lot of difficult relational issues with the kids, and it was just phenomenal. And you had the motto, what you had said, your motto about these kids, their whole motto again, like this kids, they're not the kids of the youth of the future or whatever, that kind of stuff. You know, they are you know, empowering them to work today. They are the world today. They are the working are you working on, like, how can we get this better, you guys?
Sure. What are the lessons here?
Well, my lesson was there was a couple of girls that lived in that community that sat on the periphery, you know, and figuring out how to draw the local community in. They were invited in as long as they were, you know, helpful. But they never, I don't think they're there long enough or have thought in their imagination to try to empower the local youth to keep this work alive as, the, you know, all of these little summer teams lead. And so, and yet that's such a great resource, you know, because the young people were fabulous.
People from that area.
Yeah, actually. Yeah, just draw them in and build a program with them to be the leaders.
I think kind of going along with it is I think it's a very big mindset thing, is because I think young people are very underestimated a lot of the time. Like, people don't always see them as capable of being, you know, honestly, these really good contributors that, you know, so many people are in general. It doesn't matter exactly what age you are. And I think when that's kind of put on a negative spin like that, like even like reading stuff like that, it's like, youth don't contribute and this doesn't happen. Like, you know, people respond to that in a negative way, like, oh, you know, I can't do anything, so why even try? Like, I think that's a very downward spiral way of looking at things, where, like, if we can have messages and stuff like that out there, like you're saying, like, getting people involved and getting people to relate to different issues that you can, you know, see in your life, like, even seeing issues that other kids are going through, like, that's a very positive thing for them to respond to, like, be able to say, like, oh, that's me, like, that is me in that situation. And there's a lot of power in that kind of statement.
Are there positive messages like that out here? Does anybody even hear messages like that, or?
I was embarrassed as a parent as my kids got into middle school, the negative things coming from adults about, oh my gosh, you know, kid's going to be a teenager. I mean, how would you feel being a teenager hearing that all the time? And what a way to look at, you know, the opposite is actually true, that becoming more and more capable and independent and contributing more and more. I had exactly the opposite experience with my kids, and I'm really just, we as adults have to work on that. It's terrible.
Yeah, it seems like working with kids of all ages, I mean, as low as can talk, everyone wants to have something that they can take pride in, take ownership in doing something, doing a job. And as anyone of any age knows, you can take pride in the work you do. But what's really been awe-inspiring to me at Holden, especially the last couple of days running the bowling tournament, is how amazing and willing kids are to just been, like, set up pins. A job where, to me, you know, I think Steve was bowling and he said, you know, I can think of at least 740,000 things I'd rather do than set up pins. But the kids were absolutely, not only did they want to do it, but they took pride in it. And they were incredibly competent at whatever we needed them to do. And some of these kids were like 8, 9 years old. And so, yeah, we've been focusing on 12 and 13 year olds, but it even goes below that. I'd say when the moment you could talk, and maybe before that, just smaller responsibilities should be given away.
Well, I think when adults are giving us all this negative, our reaction is to rebel. And we want to show them that we don't like the way they're acting. So that's why we're doing a lot of things that just aren't good things for them to do. Like, we just want to rebel against them. We don't like the way they're acting.
Well, they're not respecting us when they're saying, oh, well, you're the problem in this situation, or you're not any good at this, you're not useful, you're not.
Yeah, and that's just kind of creating more problems than we rebel.
Well, I know as an adult that if somebody has a negative expectation of me, even if I want to overcome it, I'm sometimes almost compelled to fulfill it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's really
you have that
spite.
Well, I don't even consciously. It's just something that if you don't trust me, I prove myself to you to be untrustworthy.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if anybody can think of some examples of ways that people have given you trust. I mean, you've talked about your, you've talked about, you know, running a snack bar, which is, but where did those messages come from? And when did they, how can we improve on giving them?
Yeah. From my anthropology religion class, they talked, we looked at where kids were entering the religious field and what kind of roles were they taking on as kids in the sacred elements or whatever in different religions. And it was always there was a limit where kids were allowed to help with communion like we do at Olden here. Kids are allowed to do everything except for the sacraments themselves. And that was true across in anthropology and the other religions too. And I remember at my home church, we've had kids run on Sunday, so there's kids giving sermons, and there's kids providing communion. But a pastor's there, you know, to be a guide and to be someone like a resource, but everything gets turned over, and those are always people's favorite things. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a little different. So, well, as long as something's not going to get messed up, if you provide everything else to the kids.
I think sometimes, I mean, as adults, we get so caught up in just getting things done, and it's a whole lot easier in the short run to just assume that you're going to do it better than anyone else than it is to take the time to teach somebody else to do it. And so I wonder if some of this evolution, as you know, that comes out as, oh, you can't do this, you're no good, comes from that habit of feeling like we need to do it because we know we can get it done. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Not much of that's also just stubbornness.
Probably.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
And, well, I think that kind of also is like cutting out my legs from underneath us because, like in the snack bar, when I have volunteers, it's not, I mean, I can do things, but, you know, Joseph, I take this all with a grain of salt. But, I have to give responsibility to others because I can't do it all by myself. And I'm sure I could try to scoop, do dishes, and take money, and I'm sure it'd be awful. But, I mean, I think when we think we can do it all ourselves, we're saying you can't do it.
And oh, we totally are. And it's the wrong it's the wrong message. Yeah.
And I feel like parents also have an important role in this naturally because they need there needs to be opportunities or responsibilities placed on their children. And in a clear way. Don't say just do this. Say I do this because I need this to happen and this is how it helps the family function. And I'll go right. I went to Kenya when I was 14, and I asked my mom a year before I went. I said, "Mom, I want to go to Kenya. There's this trip," and she's like, "Well, sure, but you have to come up with the money." It was just flat out on the table like that. I was like, and she said, "I'll help you, but it's you." And that was a big deal for me. But I mean, I was like, "Okay, I'll do it." Mm-hmm. And I feel like if we gave children those kind of opportunities, like, here's something you want to do. Here's some tools, but you're the one doing it.
How did you do that?
I sold cookies.
Okay.
You made them and sold them?
Yeah.
Tons of them.
Yeah.
You know,
but there was a sense here that you don't feel like they know what they're doing. You know, that sometimes we do say, just do it, and we've forgotten that, you know, so if we want to do things in a real, not a perfectionistic way, but whatever, if we want it done to a certain quality, and we never train, you know, and at 50 years old, I've had to step into leadership positions that I feel like I could not do it without training, and we're still feeling that way in the church, right, that we need to have some good training and good leadership, and so if we just, the way to empower youth is to just show them, you know, like do a habitat project and everyone gets in line to learn how to use the instrument and then you send them on your way and and there is this trust.
I don't know who was first.
I would say, thanks, it's more than just showing people what to do and then having them do it too. There's a piece of it that comes with understanding that young people have a special things to offer any community that we couldn't possibly show them because it's their gift alone. It's not just about teaching them what it means to be an adult. And as an example, I would offer, I was a youth director for a number of years, and so I, this kind of stuff I've learned about a lot over the years. And one of the things that happened one day in church was we were going through, I had a whole bunch of them in the back of the church, of course, because we just come up with a retreat. And we were going through the motions of communion at the point where the pastor is up front saying, how's it go? It is right to keep God things. The Lord be with you and also with you. We lift up our hearts, we lift up to the Lord. It is right to give God thanks and praise, this whole thing. And one of my, before we got to that part, one of my students said, it doesn't make sense that we say these words, but we don't actually do them. Like, isn't it weird that we say it is right to give God thanks and praise and so clearly don't do them? So they came up with this plan, and thankfully this is in a church where this was an okay thing to do this, where they would actually do it that day. And so 45 of them from the back of the church shouted those words, which scared the pastor. But he dealt with it well and said, it is indeed right and salutary, as our youth have so graciously reminded us. It should at all times and in all places offer thanks and praise. I mean, so for a perspective of a person who's been sitting in church for a long time and said those words so often that it doesn't even matter anymore whether we mean them or not, we get reminded by people who are paying attention to this stuff, and that's because they offer that fresh perspective. So we need to not only think, well, they might be able to do this thing that I also can do, but that they can do things they can't do.
Think back there. Did you have a question? Oh,
Chris, a minute.
Okay.
Yeah, this is back to my piano sack about. My mom still tells me this, but the number one thing that I absolutely hate, I hate all my life, when someone tells me, do this because I tell you so.
Yeah, right.
Like, do this because I'm your mother.
Yeah.
Yes, that fourth commandment of honor your father and mother.
Yeah.
In that specific way, but if you're going to teach your child to think, mm-hmm. and if you're going to teach them to trust you, mm-hmm. that's got to be, do this because this is why.
Yeah.
And then it'll make sense in their head, and then they'll do it anyway. But for a child to question, and then just get shot down because of some sense of hierarchy, then when they get to be that old, you can have another sense of hierarchy, and this hierarchy above them. And mm-hmm. instead of people working together, as we're trying to talk about, you just get this terrible system of levels, and, completely unproductive.
That's a great point. Just with age stratification in general, you know, we're always going to have this. Everyone's like, well, nobody, you know,
yeah.
in school, nobody respects, you know, you don't respect the younger kids, or you don't respect, but, you know, it's just, it comes from the top. Yeah?
I was going to say that, you know, I think back to what Holly was saying a few minutes ago, that one of the things that happens when people say, oh, you know, these kids are teenagers, is just fear of what's going to happen. And if you can break through that and be able to not just expect things to be a certain way, because they're not going to be the way that they were when the children that you're working with, the young people you're working with were 10 and 11, and they're not the way that they were when they were 6, you know. But there's a certain amount of fear and lack of control that a lot of adults, I mean, recognize. It's true, there's definitely a lack of control. So is that a bad thing? It's only a bad thing if there's some reason that it's objectively bad, that's a, you know, a safety issue or something like that. But I think if you can trust the people you're working with and that you're meeting with and talking with the thing that you're doing. I mean, I drove to a youth retreat 2 weekends ago, and there was one girl who kept saying, can I drive? And I kept saying, no. And she said, why not? And I just said, you don't have a license and you're 13. And that's the answer.
Yeah.
But I've seen people do it. Well, okay, you know, that isn't gonna happen. And some of the other girls were like, geez, okay. But then there were other things, you know, we're making California rolls. So I, you know, they were doing this, can I do this, can I do this? Can I use the knife? And I'm like, well, let's see how well you do with it. And it turned out they did fine, you know? And so we worked kind of through it. And these kids were young enough that you could still kind of work through rather than just saying, go build a house, you know, put the roof on or something, and then have them be able to organize it. But it's a constant as an adult, as a parent particularly. The adult thing isn't such a problem. Parent thing is a problem. You have this fear, you know, and this desire for safety and desire to guide. And I think at some point you got to just let grace in there and recognize that, you know, there are boundaries you can set. Selena is not driving my car. On the other hand, you know, things happen when you allow them to. There was a girl who just didn't seem to really enjoy much of anything. And there was this one thing. She turned out to be the great sushi chef. She absolutely loved it. She wanted the recipe. She said, I'm going to have my dad make these. I said, how about you make them? She said, you know, I can do that. I thought, hey, cool. You know, and that's like the thing that got through to her for the whole weekend. And now she's, you know, empowered. I don't know. That's a long-winded way of saying I think we have a lot of fear, and it's also a real challenge to break through that for parents and for adults.
Well, the other side of that too is the Leo community meal at church every month, and I had some kids in to help one Saturday on prep, and it was the adult who cut herself. and went home and never came back. And it was kind of odd because the kids are working with the knives and the slicer and they were, you know, they did fine, and it's the adult that went home with an allergy.
You know, I have to say that the technology is what's gonna sort of reverse this cycle, because youth are so much more technologically aware and able to do all of that stuff, and pretty soon we're going to be totally dependent on
I know.
We're going to have to scratch it over our heads.
Joseph, do you have something else over there?
Well, when I think about what Jody was saying about the people of India identifying this group that they don't have, I realize that what we're doing actually is cutting this group out of the fabric of our society. And what you were talking about, Holly, with the particular gifts that this particular group of people have that are part of our society and part of our body of our social body and the body of Christ, really. So what we're doing is we're denying ourselves a particular function and a particular gift. It's like we've decided not to use our left arm or something.
Yeah.
And so, of course, we're afraid of it because we don't know what it can do. We don't know what it, you know, what its gifts are and what its potentials. I mean, it could, it could do something wild. But, you know, we don't. I think it's really important that we realize how much we're missing by letting this. Wonderful group of energetic people kind of get away from us and not give us, not allow ourselves to enjoy these gifts.
Great point. Yeah.
Well, just expanding on what Carol was saying, we're wasting all this talent.
That's right.
Teenagers, young people, and at the other end of the spectrum, senior citizens.
Yep.
Because these people, these two groups have so much to offer, and we're not using them. I'm not talking about going back to Dickens slave labor, children labor, thing, but just the idea of doing anything in the community. But people my age and, you know, anywhere from 25 to 45, well, some of the teenagers, you don't know anything, you're no good, you know, and then they don't know how to do something. Well, maybe their idea is better. Let them try their idea of how to do stuff. And it's just, you know, it's kind of a waste.
Go ahead, Jason.
They have the energy, too. We don't have it.
Yeah. I found this, since I've come to Holden, it's the 20-year-old group that I have kind of connected to. I find that I've made friends with a lot of people of the age of 20. And then at school, we have something called Independent Project. It's where you get to choose just a project that you'd like to pursue on your own. And you find villagers that have done this with their lives. And I found almost every independent project I did, I always had somebody in the age group of 20-year-olds. Two 20-year-olds. And I'm just being my the age group that they're kind of fresh out of my age, and they still somewhat understand that, how it feels.
I also think that in the church, or I think this cultural thing that's going on is that we are
isolating all different kinds of groups, you know. We'll even decide that we're going to have a contemporary worship service to make the young people happy, and then we're going to have, you know, the traditional to make the old people happy, and the youth are going to go over here and do something, and we're going to go over here and do something, and we're missing that weaving together. I don't want my family to dissect and the kids to go off to one service and me go off to another, and, you know, and we miss the, all those interactions that are just fabulous by isolating, chunking us out, and separating.
Abby, did you have a question back there?
No question.
Comment, I'm sorry.
I have kind of an example. I guess my story would be about just stepping up. This was in college, my second year of college. I wouldn't have, you know, gone up in any kind of leadership role in high school, so this was the start of it for me. But I went to college at Luther down in Iowa. And at Luther, I had the opportunity as a Spanish major to volunteer at a free clinic translating for the people in the area who didn't speak English, just Spanish. And there's a community near Decorah that called Postville, metaphor of it. There's a very large population of Hispanic immigrants. And so many of those people would come to the free clinic because they weren't legal, they didn't have insurance, so we'd help them out. It was my sophomore year when I came back from a winter break. They told us that the turkey factory, one of the plants that a lot of these people worked at, had burned down. And so all these people were without jobs, they didn't know what to do, they were, you know, they had kids in school there, they basically just left with nothing, no income. So right away we said, we have to do something, you know, we have to help the people out. We've been serving them, like translating, and we become their friends, we have to do something. And so the organizer of the clinic, a retired woman, one of our Spanish professors, and an AmeriCorps volunteer, and myself, we sat down and we organized a fundraising event. We called it Decorah Loves to Share. And within like 2 months, maybe, we put together this whole event. We found a place, a big space, we found a band, we got food prepared. We had I think it was like a $5 entry and a can of food or something like that. And we put together this event and raised a couple thousand dollars for these people and supporting them whatever way we could. And I think it's important to, you know, see these opportunities that come up, whether it's injustice or people in trouble, whatever, and find out what we can help. It was a fun time. It was just a lot of fun. Our whole Spanish club was involved with it. Kids in the community, and tons of people showed up.
And you were like 19?
Yeah, 19.
Wow.
But yeah, it was just a great time, a great way to get involved.
And that's a time too where it's not like you're training somebody to do a job, you know, that you're going to do. It's like the opportunity is there, and they invent the solution and invent, you know, start from scratch, a whole new idea. Dylan, you had your hand up before.
Yeah, I'm going to go off of her contemporary worship, traditional, as far as church. The church I go to in Oregon, while I'm in college, does the same thing. They have a youth service contemporary in the morning, and a traditional later, you know, because people don't want to get up. But it's the same, mother and father would drop their kids off, and they'd go to the morning service, and then the mother and father would go in the afternoon. And though, there's one time of the year, I don't know if it's Lent or something, but they mix services, they just have one. And it's like half hymns and half contemporary. And to be completely honest, it's extremely awkward. I take joy in like looking around and watching the old faces when there's praise guys stand up, and then I take equal joy watching hymns. But the reason why it's so awkward is because neither side is willing to compromise or to be accepting at all. And to where there's this line where it's like, you know, for kids, they're saying, well, if they're not going to let me worship in my way, I'm not going to respect them. You know, that's too old, it's too old, whatever it is, the message of sin. people to start sitting down and saying, why can't we just do it and compromise, do one my way, one your way, and learn to respect the beauty of that, as opposed to that division, which is so prevalent now of contemporary versus traditional, especially in Lutherans, because hymns, you know, that's what's been, and I love it.
I love the way you say there's beauty in all yeah. of them. You know, why do you have to pick and choose? Yeah, their value in all of it.
On a kind of different note, what Carol was saying earlier about cutting off a limb and stuff like that, I'd also like to say that it's not only cutting off a limb by not giving any responsibilities to you. You kind of sit them there, and then what do? They have this community that doesn't respect them.
Yeah.
And so I feel like a lot of bad crimes, stuff like that, all the stuff that youth have bad reputations for is born out of boredom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know how many of my friends in Nebraska just would get in trouble just because there's nothing better to do.
Yeah.
Just make people mad because they don't respect you anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like, when people are bored, they entertain themselves. They don't care about the community.
Isn't boredom a form of feeling useless?
Yeah.
Like nobody values you and there's nobody.
You don't have anything to contribute.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I'm talking too much. I'll try not to. My hometown of New Mexico, the big saying is for youth, there's nothing to do but each other. The sad part is it's incredibly true. And so you get these teenage pregnancies that. I was a summer camp counselor. I had a couple of girls who couldn't come because they were pregnant at 11. You know, and then you get like in our county at the highest suicide, highest drug rate. But there was no youth center. It's a tourist-based town, so the community aspect's not there. And it is. It's so much to where, as a youth community, that gets to talk with each other if they're all abandoned and bored. Well, if they're not going to support us, and no one's encouraging us to go do something positive, well then let's just not.
Are you going to get in trouble anyway? So you may as well just.
It's on the far side of the room over there, but I know that Kai sings with his dad's group, and I think that's really cool. And, you know, what's that like, Kai?
It's not really my dad. He's kind of
that group.
Oh yeah, two groups. The one that I think you're talking about, my dad's not the hero. My uncle is.
I sing. What's that like singing?
It's kind of interesting because there's like 18 men and 2 boys.
Huh.
And it's kind of fun to be a part of something and not just be the singer's son.
Yeah.
To be a singer and not just the son.
You're hearing this theme, right, of the sort of incredible eagerness of young people to get in the game and to do something meaningful. I mean, it's just there all over the place. And we haven't quite tapped into it as a people, as a society yet. Although there's some good news, let me just say. It's that, I mean, both in congregations and anybody here done Lutheran Volunteer Corps, for example? What was that like? Tell us a little bit about that.
I was at NSTREET in DC, so I worked with homeless women in a day center. It was good. They gave us keys to the church and the shelter and the van and plan activities.
Okay.
Go and do. No, they were really good at teaching, so they would kind of ask us what we were planning and try to make sure that we weren't going to get anybody lost or killed, but other than that, pretty much. So, like, no, and there were times we'd be driving around downtown DC in the NSTREET van. With 15 women from our shelter, all of whom have pretty severe mental illnesses. Went to the Kennedy Center for a show that we got free tickets to. And it worked out, it was good. You definitely learned to tend to yourself and plan activities and trust yourself that you can pull it off.
I think if you start looking around, you can begin to see a pattern here that we may be about to turn a corner in terms of how we as a society value young people and invite young people to be contributors. I mean, there's this, you just tick off a couple of them. How many in high school had to do some service learning of some kind or some some kind of community service to graduate from high school. That's now really common, and 10 years ago that wasn't common. That's a fairly new phenomenon. If you look at college students, the rate at which college students volunteer for community activity is higher now than it's ever been. Students are just constantly going into communities to do stuff. The opportunities like Lutheran Volunteer Corps, Jesuit Volunteer Corps, all of this stuff right after college is they're all growing. There's talk in the presidential campaign, both by McCain and Obama, about doubling, tripling, and quadrupling AmeriCorps and VISTA and all of the volunteer opportunities for young people. I just think there's something going on here that all of these things are a part of, right? That are beginning to say, yeah, we really do need young people in our communities to be contributors, or we got an arm that's cut off, right?
Mm-hmm. That is really true, actually. Starting this year, we just graduated from high school, and all the seniors had to have a certain amount of hours of community service. And a lot of them couldn't make it to graduate at all. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the only reason why they didn't graduate, is because of the community service. Mm-hmm. And it's not hard.
No.
It's not hard to help the community out at all. I've always been able to just do things that I love to do, and it counts as community service.
Why do you think those kids didn't complete that piece? What were the obstacles?
Some of them, one of my friends actually, he almost didn't get it hours, is because he had so much, like, he had work, and some of them just don't care at all. They've had lives, like, the parents don't get involved in their lives at all, some of them, and they don't care about helping the community out at all. And some of them, like me, for instance, I've always had loving parents that have always done things with me and for me and asked me to help, and my family's always been there for me, and I love helping them. Other people and like doing new things. I think it really helped. It's definitely depends on people asking you to do things or suggesting things for you to do, not just telling you you're independent, do what you want. Mm-hmm. You have to have people there to help you and guide you through all these movements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in contrast to just the couple of hours that must be required at high schools today in America, I know that in Germany there's a half year to a year long requirement for any graduate to work in a community position, whether that's in the army and
or social service.
Or social service.
So there's talk about that now in the U.S. What do you think about that? Would that work in the United States to sort of require a half year or a year of community service or some kind of a...
I don't like the idea of the Army one. And neither did my friend, but there was always options. So you had the free choice of not doing it. And I would like that if it was more international too, not just...
I think it's also interesting because, like, the idea of community service is very almost counter-societal to the way our society works in general. Like, everything's very individualized and everything's very centered on the self. Like, even something as simple as, like, your education and going to college is it can be a very selfish thing. Like, you can be very focused in on, like, I'm doing this so that I can get this degree, so that I can have this job and I can do this kind of thing with my life,
my job.
Exactly. And like personally, from being parts of leadership positions in college, like, that can be a very frustrating thing, because going in with, like, the not caring aspect, like it's hard to make people care about different issues. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to kind of be that way of countercultural, because it is a countercultural thing. Like, even in college, when college is a time to, like, you are in this community where there's so many opportunities to be able to serve different things or different things that you find personally relatable to you. But it is a difficult thing to make people want to care about stuff like that, or to change even your own aspect sometimes of like, this is what I'm focused on, me, me, me. Like, it's really hard to change that as a whole. And I mean, there are little things that you can do. I really don't know what I'm trying to say with this statement. It's just that it can be a really difficult thing.
What is it? At home, I had that experience. I came in the winter, it was a long time ago, 1980 or something, but some youth my age came in the winter. They'd never been here in the summer before, and this attitude started festering about, you know, what am I doing, you know, giving my time for... It's that giving of yourself, you know, your time and your energy without getting paid. What am I doing this for without this? Because it was this meaning. And I remember just trying to, you know, you don't know how to get this into them where you're being fed by this. And there's just a total disconnect with that service, that just giving of yourself without this monetary gain or something.
If you think about where we are as a culture, we have always been, if you think about the spectrum from highly individualized to highly collective or communal, we're way over on one end, right? Our culture is. And I think what that means is that there's a whole yearning for something that is relational, for something that it has to do with the community. And I think what we're hearing about is a whole set of efforts to sort of fill in a set of gaps in a highly individualized and personalistic, because that's the truth about some of our society. But it's also, I think, the truth that we are partly social beings. And when that part doesn't get fed, right, we're not complete. And we need some kind of a set of balances in our lives. And places like Holden and other opportunities, I think, provide that in a variety of ways.
I think it's important to recognize, along with what you're saying, I think this fits, that when we ask the question, why is it so hard for some young people to do this service so that they will graduate, or what would it be like to across the board service, like, it is true, it's going to be hard to get everybody to participate, and it would be if it were adults you were looking at, too. I mean, it's not particular to young people that thing at all.
Definitely. It was a lot of the parents down, right? It started at home. The parents thought there's no way my kid should have to do that to graduate from high school. And then that was just feeding into the whole attitude of the kids. So it was definitely not an isolated.
If you don't get love, how are you going to give it?
Yeah.
Well, it seems like if it's required, it doesn't really teach you to want help. You're doing it because you have to do it or you're not going to graduate. And yeah, I've heard that they're doing it now, but it seems like I have friends who brag about their kid did this 3 years ago. Oh, so what do they do? Well, no, they did that already.
Right.